Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup on health, wellness, and preventative medicines. Here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Welcome back to edition number 287 of Sunday House Call. We're broadcasting live on the Sunday House Call Radio Network and from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And we are taking your calls at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. Our topic for the next little while is going to be the H1N1 vaccine. Dr. Isra Levy, the City of Ottawa's Chief Medical Officer of Health, has graciously given us a bit more time during this hour for the next 20 minutes or so to answer your questions. And we're going to get to those questions right now. And there was one email question that we were discussing off air, but is very important. And this had to do with a three-year-old boy who has asthma, who also has an egg allergy. And the skin testing was 3 out of 5. And he has had hives in the past as a result of consuming eggs. And the mother of the child is asking that her allergist has said that they could provide coverage for him to prevent an allergic reaction and give H1N1 vaccine, but that's not available in physicians' offices, and wants to know what she should do because he falls within the two categories. That is, he's under 5, and he is also has a chronic lung disease, which is asthma. So what should she do? And you mentioned a concept called cocooning. So what should this mother do?
Thanks very much. It's a great question because one of the very, very few contraindications to this vaccine, in other words, people that we don't want to give the vaccine to without really thinking it through with an allergist, are people with egg allergies. So this is a young boy who has an egg allergy. Typically, he would have that vaccine given to him with his allergist present rather than at one of our clinics. Unfortunately, because of the supply challenges that we've got, and other logistical challenges, it's unlikely that we're going to be able to get vaccine to our allergists and indeed to our family doctors and others who want to give the vaccine for several weeks, 2, 3, 4 weeks before we're able to have enough supply and distribute the vaccine to those of you. Even you yourself, Dr. Dworkin, I know, want to do this in your practice. So what do we do in the meantime? And actually, this these sequenced groups, the federal government has announced a list that all Canadian public health authorities have agreed on that includes people who should get the vaccine first as it comes off the manufacturing lots. And I think many people understand and have heard now that anyone between the age of 6 months and 65 years of age with underlying conditions, any child under the age of 5 years, pregnant women, and healthcare workers are the sequenced groups. There's another sequenced group relevant to Ottawa, and that is people who live with or care for or are in intimate contact with any one of the other three groups who are at high risk, where the other individual, for whatever reason, isn't able to get the vaccine. And so for this particular child, what we'd be recommending is that his family, his parents, his siblings, get the vaccine in the first sequenced groups. That creates this cocoon effect and helps to protect him even further than the broader community getting their vaccine. And then as soon as we are able to get vaccine out to the allergists and work with the allergists in town a few weeks from now, she'll be able to work with her allergist to get her son vaccinated as well.
Okay. We're going to go to line 4 and speak to Sally in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I heard a story, I don't know if it's true or not, about a Gulf War effect, that American soldiers had been given a vaccine that contained squalene, and afterwards everyone who came home with Gulf War syndrome that had arthritis and chronic fatigue, everyone who had it had some squalene found in their blood, and people who didn't have it didn't have the squalene in their blood. So that's got me afraid to give it to my 2 small children.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's one of those rumors that is circulating around there. It simply isn't true. Squalene is actually a natural product. We all have squalene in our bodies. Our own livers produce squalene. The commercially used squalene that is used in vaccines of different kinds is highly purified. It goes through 3 distillation cycles, and any protein at all that causes allergies or that theoretically could cause allergy or other untoward effects are destroyed. So that's simply just an unfounded rumor, and even more so, as I understand it, the vaccine that was given to the U.S. troops before they went never had squalene anyway.
That's right. The anthrax vaccine, I looked this up as well, the anthrax vaccine that was given to the Gulf War soldiers did not have squalene in it. And so the hypothesis now is that they're coming back from the Gulf because of some exposure to something. There has to be something that gave them those effects, but was not related to the vaccine, likely something else that they were exposed to. And again, squalene is produced, it's found in fish, it's found in the foods that you eat, it's even found in cosmetics, and your liver makes it. It's part of the process in terms of cholesterol metabolism. It's used in that process as well. So to do blood tests, your comment about how they said that they did the blood tests and they found squalene in the soldiers and who had the disease and those that didn't, can't really happen because your body is making it naturally anyway, so there has to be some in your body to begin with.
Great. Well, that's helpful. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome, Sally.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to line 3 and Laura in Ottawa. Good afternoon. Laura, are you there?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I am. Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
I was just wondering, for the H1N1 virus, how long is it, I guess, does it live on a surface when somebody who's had it, who has it has touched something? And then how long till you would see the first effects if you contract it?
So influenza, any influenza is spread by what we call droplet spread, which means that if someone who's infected with influenza coughs or sneezes, the influenza virus can survive in little particles, if you're within a meter or two of the individual and breathe in some of those particles, you can catch an infection, or if you touch a surface that's become contaminated from some of those droplets. Typically, we think that the virus doesn't live for longer than about 48 hours at the most, somewhere between 6 and 48 hours.
Okay.
And that's a good reason why one should use sanitizers and clean not only your hands, but also surfaces with commercially available disinfectant products. In terms of how long before you begin to feel ill, typical incubation period for influenza is about 3 days. There's a range around that in different studies, ranges from roughly 2 days to 7 days. In other words, if you've become exposed to the virus, it could take as little as 2 or as much as 7, or with pandemic people are saying even 8 days before you begin to feel symptoms. The important thing also is that you could be infectious for about a day before you begin to feel symptoms.
Okay. And if you do have it, but you don't realize because the symptoms haven't shown, is it safe to have the shot? Or
yes, absolutely.
It's probably a benefit.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Laura.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. And we're going to go to line 4 and speak to David and Elmer, who says his son has H1N1 and he's wondering about getting vaccinated. Good afternoon, David.
Hi. Yeah, we haven't been told that he has H1N1. It's just he has a high fever now. He's coughing a bit. He has flu-like symptoms. So we don't know, we're thinking of giving him a vaccine when it's available. But I was told that if you've already had it, you should not be getting the vaccine, that it's actually dangerous.
No, there's no truth to the fact that there's any danger. It's true that for those small number of people who we actually can be absolutely certain have had the pandemic H1N1 flu, there's probably no added benefit, but that's a very, very small number, and there's certainly no danger in having the vaccine.
Okay. So there's no added benefit, but there's no danger.
Well, let me just emphasize, the vast number of people who have flu-like symptoms don't have flu. Typically, about 80 to 95% of people who think that they've had a flu have actually had one of these other viruses that caused the common cold, rhinovirus, adenovirus, parainfluenza virus. So unless you've really literally had a test done and the laboratory has told you first of all, flu, it's influenza virus, and second of all, the pandemic strain of influenza virus, you should be getting the vaccine if you're over the age of 6 months.
Is there a way to tell. I mean, he's got the high fever, like over 39. He's got a bit of a runny nose, but not so much, with some coughing.
Yeah,
I mean,
The only way to tell really is if you're in one of these research studies that right now I don't think they're even running, where blood gets taken to test, but that's not a routinely done thing. And really, you should make the assumption that it wasn't the pandemic flu virus that he had, and he should get the vaccine.
And David, I should add, with regards to being vaccinated and having had the flu, all that happens, remember, the way a vaccine works is your body destroys it. Your body identifies the proteins that are in the vaccine, develops antibodies to destroy it, and then creates memory to remember what those proteins were, so that in the event it comes across the virus again, it destroys it very quickly. So all that happens, if someone has had the flu, they're already immune, you give the vaccine, it just wallops the vaccine and destroys it immediately.
So it
doesn't give you anything to make you sick.
But my niece was confirmed to have H1N1 with a blood test, and she would never be someone that would take the vaccine then.
If my understanding is, if she had...
she did have a blood test, and they said it was H1N1.
Yeah, so if she had H1N1, that is pretty much the same as having had the vaccine, but in this case having had the illness in concert with the vaccine. So she would have antibodies, one would assume, given the infection, that would protect her and would not need the vaccine again.
Okay, and just a very quick question. When people get the vaccine, are they actually able to carry the virus and still spread it to those that have not had the vaccine?
No, absolutely not. The virus is split and killed, so the vaccine does not cause either flu in the person who's got the vaccine or any possibility that they could spread the flu to someone else.
Even with, like, physical contact, shaking hands, and... As carriers of the virus, just through contact, I was just wondering, like, how does a vaccine prevent that kind of spreading?
The reason this happens is that if you're immune, the vaccine has no toehold. The virus has no toehold because your body is destroying it.
So the virus can't live on your skin for a certain amount of time and then come home and spread to those that haven't had the vaccine?
Well, if the virus that's in the vaccine isn't alive.
No, I mean the virus, like, just pick... Say I've been vaccinated.
I see what you're saying.
I'm in contact with the virus.
Well, that's a great point, David. That is, you know what? That would be no different than having the virus sitting on a surface for 48 hours. So, yes, you could be vaccinated and not get sick. You bring your hands to your mouth, you won't get sick. But if someone who has the virus and touches your hands, and you don't disinfect your hands, yes, you could spread it. Because it's not in your body, it's on the surface of your body. But that's a great point, David. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay, so it's when we do get vaccinated, we should still be cautious about washing hands.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Very helpful, thank you.
And I'd like to thank Dr. Isra Levy for taking the 20 minutes. I know he has to head off, he's got other business to do. We will be taking your calls at 1-800-580-2372, still answering your calls about the flu and H1N1 and any other medical conditions. And once again, Dr. Levy, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call. The doctor takes your calls now toll-free at 1-800-580-2372.